You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports with Jim Daniels on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day. And now, it's Jim Daniels.
Here's the kick. It's a swift kick. Here's a pass to the other side of the field, and it's caught by Corn Elder. Elder's got it at the 30-yard line. He's surrounded. Now he pitches it back to Jaquan Johnson. He picks it up on one hop. He's running backwards. He's looking for a block. He throws it backwards, and it's caught there by Mark Walton. Walton trying to keep it alive. He gets it to Jaquan Johnson. He tosses it back. Here comes another pitch. Corn Elder has it. Looks left. Throws right all the way back to the goal line. Looking for a block is Dallas Crawford. He keeps it alive. Chucks it all the way across the field. It's caught there at the 15. There's a big block at the 30. To the 35. To the 40. To midfield. And still going is Corn Elder. He's at the 40-yard line.
Come on, oh, baby.
He might
go.
He's at the 20. He's at the 10. At the 5. He scores. He scores. Corn Elder scores. It's a touchdown. It's a miracle. Unbelievable.
Yes, indeed it is. The Miami miracle. That's what they're calling it. I've even got a Miami fan in the studio to verify that it's the Miami miracle. We normally don't play play-by-play clips for you on Speaking of Sports, but, you know, I'm playing that to make a point, and the point is that, you know, we love the games. That's why we watch. That's why we are as involved in the level that we are. This is something that you've got to see because we see it attempted over and over again by the college kids as well as the pros. Hey, it's the last chance. It's 3-2-1. We got nothing to lose. Let's just try and throw the ball around and see what happens. Every once in a while, it results in a touchdown. Now, David Culkut, the Duke head coach, he doesn't think that it was all that funny. As a matter of fact, he thought that there was at least more than one spot where that play went awry or went a little bit illegal. But nonetheless, it's worth the click. It's worth the effort to go and seek out Miami's miracle against Duke yesterday in the final seconds of the game in just a ridiculous 8-lateral, basically 100-yard touchdown run, because I believe they had lateraled all the way back to inside the 5-yard line and then made it all the way to the other end of the field. Some pretty amazing stuff. And again, don't normally give you play-by-play clips on Speaking of Sports. Couldn't resist this morning. Had to do it for you. Let's be prepared. This month is Fire Safety Month at the Home Depot. You'll have peace of mind from brands you trust, like Kidde Smoke Alarms with a sealed-in lithium power supply. You won't have to replace your battery for a full 10 years, so you can update your old smoke alarm once and be protected for a decade. Visit homedepot.com/firesafety for details. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. We like to go see them on the weekends. Many things for us to get to this morning on Speaking of Sports. We'll have the Professor Rick Hora is going to come by. And also, had a unique thing happen in the horse racing world side of sports. And that was the Breeders' Cup. And this year in the Breeders' Cup Classic, you had American Pharoah run. And this was advertised and apparently going to be the final race of his storied career, now very storied as a Triple Crown winner. And part of the coverage, we had like 11 hours of coverage on NBC for you on this thing on Saturday. And part of that coverage included one of our guys, Eddie Olczyk. And Eddie Olczyk, as you know, is a guy that played in the NHL for a number of years, more than 1,000 games, I want to say. And he became part owner of one of the horses that was involved in the Breeders' Cup Classic on Saturday. And he's also become a guy working for us on NBC. So want to share some of that. Had a conversation with Eddie on Friday, talking to him about his horse running on Friday. And then, of course, American Pharoah going to run on Saturday. American Pharoah winds up winning the last race and now is going to go out to stud. That, oh, by the way, is an absolutely crazy number. Looked that one up, $200,000 a shot is what American Pharoah is going to cost you in stud service if you're thinking about trying to get an American Pharoah offspring. That's what that one's going to cost you. So we got Eddie. He'll talk to him after we talk to the professor. Pete Fox is going to come in here at the end of the program. We always knock around a couple of things. Probably talk a little bit about DUI this morning, among other things. But another thing that I want to get to, and I had the opportunity to say a couple of words about this with Joel Cordes. Joel Cordes is our expert, our analyst from Bleacher Report. I said to Joel, I think this is our third season. I think he's right. I think we had a partial season 3 years ago. I think this is the start of our fourth season together. He does such a great job for me. If I just give him a plug, make sure you're listening to the last hour of our show on Sundays, and you're going to get Joel and his excellent analysis of what goes on in the NBA. But he is also a Timberwolves fan. And Timberwolves fans really suffered a huge loss in Flip Saunders. Flip Saunders was not only the president of basketball operations and the coach for the Timberwolves, but, you know, he's the architect and he's the go-to guy and he's really the heartbeat and soul of that team. And for him to pass in such an untimely fashion is tragic in a lot of ways. And I want to share some of what was written and put on our website. I don't think this is one of our guys. I think this is straight Associated Press. But they're talking about Flip Saunders, and you know, a couple of quick little stories, if I may. A couple of years back, it says that Saunders woke up in the morning of the draft for 2014, and he had a premonition that he was going to select UCLA guard Zach LaVine with the 13th overall pick. And he wrote Zach's name down on a piece of paper that morning. He stuck it in his pocket, and when it came true later on that night, he pulled it out of his pocket and he showed it to Zach to show that the faith that he had in him. Zach LaVine, when contacted earlier this week, said, "I still have that piece of paper in my room." More than a decade ago, when Flip was crisscrossing the country with Sam Mitchell as part of the T-Wolves' annual off-season promotional caravan all over the place, trying to get people pumped up and come back or come to the Timberwolves like you got Kevin Garnett to do, come and come back, he gave Mitchell, a player on the team back at the time, a coloring book for his young children that showed them how to do elementary magic tricks and give them something to do on these long car rides. Quote, "Until this day," Mitchell said, who has taken over as the coach of the Timberwolves when Saunders fell ill, "I still have that book." You know, that's the kind of guy that Flip Saunders was. That's the effect that he had on people. And, you know, these people are special in the sporting worlds. We run across many of them in coaches because they're just that kind of individual. They're just the nurturing type of individual that knows how to get through to people, not just in their recruiting manner of let me tell you how great it's going to be, how great you're going to be playing with us, but how great life is going to be and how great your career is going to be. And to take it deeper than just the numbers and playing time and minutes and things like that. Flip Saunders truly was a unique guy in the world of the National Basketball Association, so much so that you're not going to see too many people that are going to be president of basketball operations and the head coach at the same time, basically saying, you know what, there's nobody out there that we can put in this job that's smarter than I am, so why pay somebody to do what I want them to do? I'm going to do it anyway. Kind of his approach to where they were going this season. But a huge, huge loss, not only to the Timberwolves, but really to the NBA family. And I think you've seen it all around the NBA, too, with tributes. I want to say it was maybe Monday or Tuesday. I guess it was Tuesday's game when they were tipping things off and they played the Lakers. And not only were the T-Wolves wearing tribute shirts, but even the Lakers were wearing Flip warm-up shirts on the sideline before that game. And then, of course, in a miraculous finish when the Lakers could have had a nice little teardrop in the lane for an upset victory, somehow that ball managed to rattle out and the T-Wolves got the victory. So there'll be somebody to watch this season and see how they do. But, you know, thoughts and prayers, of course, to the family, friends, players, coaches, anyone that crossed Flip Saunders' path and is feeling his loss this week, as many, many people in the NBA are. All right, we've got that for you this morning. We've got the crazy Miami game. We told you a little bit about that. We've got Eddie coming up here. I think what we'll do is we'll dial up the professor for you next, get Rick Horro on the phone, and talk to him about the business of sports. We do deal making and things like that with the professor, and we'll do that coming up next. You stay close. NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. You can add all the time to that if you want it. All good all the time. NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. Thanks for tuning us in. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm your host, Jim Daniels. Time now for us to turn our attention to the deal-making and endorsement side of things. We bring the professor in now, Rick Horro from Horro Sports Ventures, to talk about some dollars. Good morning, sir.
How are you, sir? How about that football last night? We stuck up on us. This wasn't rivalry Saturday, whatever, but it's that's why college football is an $8 billion business, even without the fantasy, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, the Miami game, I guess, is one of the outrageous things that we saw last night. That was some fun stuff. You normally don't see that multilateral thing work, but it worked in this case. I hear a scratchy phone line. Are we over in England again for another round of NFL football at Wembley?
No, how's this? Is that better? We are not. You know where we are?
Where are we?
We're in Durham. What a segue. That was an amazing – I couldn't get out of that stadium, man. I decided we did the rally in the afternoon and the Durham at night. And that game, Miami's been part of some bizarre losses. Wouldn't you think, just real quick, that was Stanford band-like? I can't think of any other conclusion that even comes close.
Yeah, no, I would say exactly like the John Elway Stanford band ending, just absolute chaos. Now, you, I believe, have a daughter that goes to Duke. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's not talking to me. And remember, I'm from Miami, so I helped that program. And she texted me at the end of the night.
It's said, your fault.
She texted me at the end of the night and said, I love you, but I hate Miami.
Keep paying. P.S. Keep paying the tuition, right?
Yeah. Right. And I said,
there's always that.
We won a basketball national championship. That's what counts.
As long as she knows what's important around there in the Duke campus. All right, Rick Hoare was our guest. Let's talk about the deal-making business of sports and the World Series as at the top of our mind. Wow, one of the things that I saw in the Ohoro Sports Brief earlier in the week that I knew I wanted to talk to you about was the resale price of tickets. They've reached an all-time high in this series, especially for the three games in New York, yeah?
Yeah, and frankly, tonight, let's see what happens, because that was a heartbreaker for the Mets, but they still believe they've had it before. They remember the Red Sox, et cetera, et cetera. 3-1 is kind of tough, but at the end of the day, $1,700 average, the highest prices since, by the way, the Red Sox series 2 years ago, and it's double or so the price, even more than Kansas City. Although I bet when it goes back to Kansas City, those prices will be pretty high too. Viewership, waiting for the overnight, still a big deal. The Mets are in the top 7 in net worth, the franchise values. The Royals are in the bottom 3rd. And it proves, you know, we all like money. I'd rather have money than not money. But money cannot guarantee happiness. We all understand that. So that's my social advice of the week.
There you go. One of the things, a side note to all this ticket stuff, standing room only tickets, okay? A ticket without a seat was over $750 for these three games. The three-game set for the World Series in New York. Standing room only, $750. Crazy
stuff.
Yeah,
but let's remember where you're standing. You're standing in a building that hasn't had this kind of activity in 15 years. A. B, it's New York. So I understand the numbers.
Oh, yeah. No. The numbers make complete sense to me, especially when you take into consideration what you just pointed out. Let's move to the NFL. Actually, NFL International, because there is another game, the third and final game for this season over at Wembley Stadium. It's going to be the Detroit Lions. It's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. They'll get together and do their thing. The game between the Buffalo Bills and Jacksonville Jaguars last weekend marked the first time an NFL contest would be streamed online at no cost. Apparently, this was a huge success, yeah?
Well, a huge artistic success. Everybody's debating over the numbers, and it's hard to define what the numbers really mean. If you stay at the game and you dial it up on your way to something else on your computer for 5 minutes, does it count? I don't think it really matters to debate over whether it's 3.5 million or 20 million or a million. The NFL has proven that there is a window that can move around between regular TV and streaming, and it gets Yahoo, Facebook, Snapchat, some of these other big guys in the game for the next round of television negotiations. Mm-hmm. As you know, just got back from over the pond. And while, God bless the English, they love their Premier League, they now think off of last week's performance, the Jaguars are going to the Super Bowl. My, what a sorry state.
Yeah, well, we'll get them all schooled up here once they've got a team that's theirs full time. But the question that I want to ask coming out of this is, doesn't it make more sense to build the online viewing in other countries rather than to try and make one of our teams move over there permanently?
Well, and that's one of the things they're looking at. You know, Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, it was an amazing event. I told you last week from there that I went to Fulham, which is the Shad Khan-owned championship game team in Craven Cottage. And they have 15,000 following. They've been relegated. They'll get back to where they needed to be. But his idea is, let's have one game a year that we know is a Jaguar home game. Let's put a stake in the ground for that. Let's experiment with other games at Tottenham in the Nerd Stadium when they get it built, plus Wembley. Let's gradually increase the following. So the idea of having a guaranteed expansion team right after the L.A. situation is resolved may be a bit premature.
Rick Hoare is our guest. We talked the business of sports with the professor. Looks like Los Angeles is a step closer to landing the 2024 Olympic Games, or possibly closer. Casey Wasserman, who's co-chair of the 2024 Olympic bid for Los Angeles, is beginning to cite, I don't know if this is reaching or not, but beginning to cite the bid as more than just a sporting event, but a humanitarian effort. I don't know if this is reaching and trying to get him here, but amidst a struggle with the homelessness and education, Wasserman spoke at the Future of Cities leading in L.A., saying, a city like L.A. can do a lot of things. Let's be honest. If we don't host the games, we have no opportunity to elevate the city. Look, I know they want it. It means a whole lot of money. But the changes, I mean, getting the games here, now it sounds like they're trying to do the same thing as the lottery. It's, hey, let's do this, raise all this money, and our schools win too. Are we buying this?
Well, it may be a bit of hyperbole, but at the end of the day, it's like London, which means you build on your legacy. London's 2012 was an incredible Olympics because they didn't spend that much money because they had existing transportation and existing facilities, just right. Like L.A. would. And Casey Wasserman is using the legacy argument to try to gain some traction over Rome and Hamburg and up some of the other cities for the 2017 selection of the 2024 Games. Mm-hmm. NBC, I'm sure, lobbies as well, because remember, they spent $8 billion through 2032, and they want something in these states or in the time zones as well, time zone friendly. So I don't fault Casey Wasserman for using whatever he can. It's not going to change the educational system and put everybody in a home. But this kind of effort certainly helps focus on the bigger picture.
All right, Rick, let's move to the NBA now. Adam Silver is the boss. He presides over a league that is rich with sponsorship, television revenue, fan interest, and, of course, newfound stability. And as always, facilities are a key to all of that. Now, the Atlanta Hawks are currently working on and have been working on a plan with the Atlanta mayor to give their home, Phillips Arena, a major facelift. How big? The planned renovations for the arena could total $150 to $250 million. My question is, you're not talking about a new arena here. You're talking about adding and improving. What are they going to add to an arena that costs $200 million?
Well, a lot more concession area, a lot more suites, areas. They'll make it basically look like new in the existing facility in downtown, which, of course, you can't just build something new downtown. There's a lot of space that's prohibitive as far as real estate's concerned. It's near the new stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, that Arthur Blank is building for the Falcons. So, listen, if you have $250 million, you do a good job renovating your house. Same deal.
All right, let's talk endorsements now, because I love to talk these endorsement dollars. The numbers are staggering. Nike, Michael Jordan, you know, their undying synergy just keeps rolling. Under Nike's plan to double its Jordan brand revenue to $4.5 billion by 2020, there's a brand new Michael Jordan brand store that has just opened in Chicago's Loop to help reach that goal. Is buying Nike stock the only way to get in on this? When you hear a company say that they want to double their revenue to $4.5 billion, how do you get on that bandwagon?
Well, you buy stock, but I ain't Kramer. I'm not giving investment advice. I'm not Steinbeck's Kramer, and I'm not CNBC's Kramer. So don't buy based on that. But I will tell you this. Between the women's market and the Chinese market and Michael Jordan, not only the basketball piece, but he's now the official brand of Michigan, all of their sports, not just basketball. So they have an upward path for revenue sharing. And it's like every other retail deal. It's Under Armour, Beget, Adidas begets Nike. So the sneaker war is good for everybody. And, yeah, I have some Nike stock, too.
Good
so,
stuff.
But, again, not investment advice. But that, right. And that pays for that $250 million house renewal.
The business of sports with the professor. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Rick. It's NBC
I'm
Sports
Anthony
Radio.
Bye.
You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports with Jim Daniels on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day. And now, it's Jim Daniels.
Well, it's going to be game day in the NFL in less than an hour. We have another, the third and final for this season anyway. NFL game to be played at Wembley Stadium just outside of London. This time it's going to be the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs, a little inter-conference matchup for you. And again, that one will kick off in less than an hour, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. So actually, and I've said this before, it's nice for the Eastern time zone to get a taste of morning football, because most of the time you're waiting until after lunchtime to get it, when that's what we get out here in the West Coast all the time, is football starting at 10 a.m. When your battery loses its power, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts, pick up a Superstart battery that's an exact fit for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts has a reliable, hardworking Superstart battery that you can count on. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices. That's every day. All right, Pete Fox going to join us here coming up in a few minutes. Got a couple of things we want to talk to about him. But first, our attention goes to horse racing. Yeah, because it's, well, the American Pharoah did it again. The legendary horse that won racing's Triple Crown with a victory has done it again. Another victory this time at the Breeders' Cup Classic. That happened yesterday. American Pharoah dominated the race. That was from the wire start to finish. Won the race by a really impressive 6.5 lengths. Now the Triple Crown winner heads off to his retirement. That means to stud. That's where he's going. And we've heard that that stud fee is going to be in the neighborhood of $200,000. Wow. That's some pretty big stuff. American Pharoah also getting a bit of history with the Grand Slam there in the Breeders' Cup Classic. NBC had the whole thing covered. As a matter of fact, the NBC Sports Group televised 11 races, covered 8.5 hours of all of the doings from Ashley Judd right down to American Pharoah and at Keeneland, Kentucky. And then part of the whole thing was our very own Eddie Olczyk. American Pharoah, like I said, running for that Grand Slam place in history. The NBC Sports Group televising all of that fun stuff. And to help bring it to you live, we brought a number of people. One of them is Eddie Olczyk. He played more than 1,000 games in the NHL. He looks like Elvis, and now he's an owner. Eddie Olczyk, thanks for being with us on NBC Sports Radio.
I appreciate it, Jim. And it's a great time of year. You got hockey in full swing. The National Hockey League is front and center. And of course, you got, in my opinion, the greatest 2 days in horse racing when you got the Breeders' Cup. So thank you very much for having me. And I'm looking forward to a big weekend horse racing wise. And yeah, you mentioned it. I have a piece of a horse that's running in Friday's 2-year-old turf race, the juvenile turf. So I'm here as I'm working, and I'm also as an owner. So I'm looking forward to a big day, hopefully on Friday and on Saturday.
Sports fans know you from the NHL ice, but now you're a turf guy. Not only will you be bringing the sights and the sounds of the Breeders' Cup Classic on NBC, but you also get to experience part of the race from the owner's box. How exciting is it for you to live really, literally on both sides of the fence in horse racing?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I've owned horses for a long time, and obviously I've never had a horse compete in the Breeders' Cup. So to have a horse and be a part of a group and have Chad Brown, one of the best trainers in the world, and have Javier Castellano be riding our horse in that race on Friday. The name of the horse is Raise the Bar, like Ray Knight, and so we're really excited about it. And I'm thrilled and know that we got a shot. And that's all that you can really ask for when it comes to getting an opportunity to run in one of the Breeders' Cup races.
Again, our opportunity to speak with Eddie Olczyk, who became part of the NBC broadcast team for the Breeders' Cup race over the weekend, won by American Pharoah. Ironically, what a great way to go out with another victory before your retirement. But back to Eddie. Eddie, you've been around pro sports for many years in the NHL, but what is the best part of being a horse racing owner? I mean, how different is that from other pro sports?
Well, I think that hockey and horses, and anybody that knows me, is that there's not much better in my life besides my family than hockey and horses. I mean, that's the true daily double in the life of Eddie Olczyk. And I just think that for me, it's the people that are involved on a daily basis and the people behind the scenes that make both games go. I think both games too, Jim, really have the same fight every day of trying to get new people to come to the track or watch hockey on TV or pick up a hockey stick if you're a young kid instead of, picking up a ball or a bat or a glove. There's just so many similarities. And for me, the horse racing part, I've been a horse racing player and a fan since I was about 14 or 15 years old growing up in Chicago. And actually my first introduction to television was during the 94-95 hockey season after we won the Stanley Cup. I was a member of the New York Rangers in 94, and then we had a work stoppage. So instead of playing hockey, I went to the Meadowlands Racetrack in East Rutherford, New Jersey, and I worked at the Meadowlands Racetrack doing some handicapping for the thoroughbreds at the Meadowlands back in the fall of 94 for a couple of months. So that was my introduction to TV, and I've kind of come full circle here over 21 years and now being a part of the horse racing team at NBC in the coverage. So I love the game. I'm passionate. I believe in it. I think it's, you know, we live in a, you know, we live in a fast food society, right? I mean, you see it, you want it, you want to buy it, you want to try it, you want to go there. And I think that the more people that see hockey and horses, to have them come to the track or go to a hockey game, I think people will get hooked. And I try to be an unofficial spokesperson for both games because they're very close to me and my family. And I'm really looking forward to the Breeders' Cup this weekend here in Lexington, Kentucky for the first time.
Yeah, you know, the horse racing scene is different from all the other sports. It's fun. It's a treat. You got to spend some time and drink it all in. Now, I'd get hit in the head with a puck around here if I didn't ask you a hockey question. So here goes. The Canadians are 10-2 in this very early season. Too soon to call them a favorite in the NHL race?
Well, I don't think so, because when you have arguably the best player in the National Hockey League on your team, and that being Carey Price, the goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens, he's just been absolutely lights out. I know they got smoked the other night to Vancouver, in Vancouver, 5-1. Vancouver's a good team, but it's just inevitable that that's going to happen. You know, I'm not still sold on the Montreal Canadiens, but certainly they'd have to be one of your, you know, your final four picks in the Eastern Conference. A lot of great stories, a lot of great young players coming into the National Hockey League. Jack Eichel in Buffalo, Connor McDavid with the Edmonton Oilers, looking for the first repeat Stanley Cup winner. And, you know, since the late 90s when the Detroit Red Wings did it, can the Chicago Blackhawks do it again, win another Stanley Cup? They've already won 3 and 6. They're trying to win it back-to-back for the first time. So there are a lot of great storylines. But, yeah, I think, you know, front and center to start the year, Jim, no question, the Montreal Canadiens with their terrific 9-0 start.
Yeah, you know what? It's really been a pretty impressive. But the story, horse racing, and it's American Pharoah running into glory and the history pages, winning the Grand Slam of horse racing at the Breeders' Cup Classic on Saturday. That's Eddie Olczyk joining us on NBC Sports Radio. Thanks, Eddie.
Appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
Good to talk to him. I'm sure that he will be with us again moving forward once we get back into the horse racing season once again. Coming up next, going to talk to Pete Fox about a couple of things. There's a DUI and then a real holiday mistake. We'll talk about both of those coming up next. NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app. And we thank you for making us a part of your Sunday morning. This is NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. I'm Jim Daniels. You've tuned in Speaking of Sports. This is where we like to kick the box score aside, put the play-by-play on hold, and take a deeper look at some of the individuals and the stories that are found in the sports world. Funny, I say that, and for the first time in I don't know how many years, a couple of years of doing this show, we actually had a play-by-play clip. Started the Speaking of Sports program this morning with that unbelievable 8 lateral touchdown play by the Miami Hurricanes to upset the Duke Blue Devils. In what turned out to be probably one of the wilder finishes you're going to see this year by anybody. Pete Fox is in the update studio. I know that you've seen this. What do you give what do you say the percentage is of that play, that let's lateral until we're finally out of time or out of real estate? How often do you think that works?
At that level, once a decade.
I was going to say once in 100.
Yeah, when was the last one we remember was the Music City Miracle that I can think of, you know?
You know
I'm
what?
A Titans fan, so that one sticks out to me, but
actually, I think you're right.
It, you know.
I think you're right, though, because as far as that goes of memorable, something covered, national television we all saw and talked about, I think you're right that the last time it happened, it did happen at the pro level. And even that one was in a little bit of controversy. Now, you've seen this, obviously. Do you think his knee was down? Because this is what a lot of people will be talking about today.
I didn't pay that close attention. I just kind of caught the clip just to kind of see what everyone was raving about. So I didn't break it down like that close. Did you think it was down?
I have these television sets up on the wall in front of me, and I've seen that play. Well, I've been here for about 3.5 hours now. And so I've seen that play, about 30 times now this morning. So I look at it. I don't think so. But you know what? I'm not in super slow motion with my head and the thing and all that kind of stuff. Look, it's a great play. Move on. Let it happen. It doesn't have any great bearing on anything important in the college football world.
Can I tell you something I saw yesterday that
Please.
I found really, really refreshing? I was watching the rugby on NBC, the World Cup, and the All Blacks scored a, whatever you call it, a wicket or a touchdown or whatever. And the guy, he was running towards the end zone or whatever it's called in cricket. I mean, in rugby. And he was somewhat tackled and then slid into the end zone. And guess what, Jim? It was a score. It wasn't like, oh, his knee was down 1 yard before the end zone. No, it was a score. I was like, that's the way it should be. He got into the end zone. I don't care if his knee was down like 6 inches before he got into the end zone. He got into the end zone. That's all that matters. So I found that somewhat refreshing from the Rugby World Cup.
And, you know, maybe a lesson to be learned there. But they've got to change this catch rule in the NFL.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be three times harder than running it in? Look, I understand that you're throwing from one player to the other and he's got to come up with it. But I think more often than not, they get that call wrong in saying, oh, no, I saw the ball move a little bit. That's not exactly a catch, and we've seen other more egregious calls when it comes to that as well.
Well. Yeah, I find it interesting when the announcers, legendary Al Michaels announcers that have been around forever that are like, I don't know what a catch is anymore. That's just bad for the game, in my opinion. When you have the announcer going, I don't know what a catch is anymore.
When you have an announcer the caliber of Al Michaels, I'll add to that, saying, I don't know what's a catch anymore, that is a problem, and they should hear that. But you know what? Honestly, I think the league is still so caught up in themselves and their own arrogance that, you know, it's like, hey, this is our thing. We're going to run it the way that we want to. We don't take criticism from people. The only people that are meaning anything are these watchdog groups that come after them when they don't act properly about people misbehaving. And talking about people misbehaving, Jason Pierre-Paul has paid and will pay for the rest of his life for his misbehaving with fireworks on the 4th of July earlier this year. But earlier this week, I guess he sat down with reporters to let them ask any question they wanted and then stuck his hand up on the table and let them take some pictures. Have you seen these photos?
Yeah, and I heard you talking about it earlier. I didn't think it was all that bad. I mean, it looks pretty messed up, but I don't think it should prevent him from playing defensive lineman in the NFL.
I don't know how well you're going to be able to grab people with that hand. That hand is mangled. And as I'm looking at it, there's no index finger. The middle finger is half gone. The ring finger is a third gone. The little finger, I can't really tell, can't really see too much of that. It's covered up in one. It's actually covered up in both of them. The thumb is also mangled. I think maybe one of the joints, maybe there's just half of the thumb left. I mean, he basically blew almost his entire hand off in that fireworks accident. And I say, if anything good has got to come out of this, it's got to be this is the single greatest ad for be careful with fireworks ever. I mean, don't you think? I mean, if your parents, don't you want to show, look at this guy. This guy's playing with fireworks. Look what happened.
Well, I didn't know that we really had to have that conversation. I thought it was pretty self-explanatory. When you have explosives in your hand, you get rid of them as soon as you light them. If you're going to be that brazen or brave to play with them, light them and throw them. That's not that hard to figure out to me.
One of the other photos they've got him all decked out in his practice gear, and he's got his gloves on. And now, of course, it looks like he's wearing it's a cartoon glove now because it doesn't have enough fingers in it. But how this is going to affect him playing the game, I don't know. I don't know how functional that hand is, but the pictures coming out today were absolutely shocking.
Well, he made a comment that he thinks it's going to make him be more, or he's going to have to be more technical and not be able to rely on grabbing people as much. So I guess it's safe to say that if Jason Pierre-Paul ever gets a holding penalty, that something is really wrong.
But I'm pumped. Daniel Murphy, do you think he's going to wind up wearing the Buckner tag over that little dribbler between the legs last night? Because he's certainly put the Mets in a bad spot.
Wow, that's interesting. I don't think so. I mean, he's done so much positive for them this postseason. I would hope outweighs one little negative thing.
You mean like those six home runs in a row that has exactly got them where they are?
Right. Yeah, look, I mean, it wasn't just his fault. I guess that led to a big inning, but, he didn't cause them to lose yesterday or the first two games in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So, and in those games, he had big at-bats. So I don't think so, but people will point. It's going to cost him some money, let's put it that way, when it comes to his free agent.
Yeah, because he is a free agent after this season. It's definitely going to probably cost him a little bit of money there, probably going to cost him a little endorsement dollars because, the guys on the winning side are the ones that get all of that. I'm sure that he would be, greatly sought after, especially after setting the home run record, the postseason home run record. But I think Bill Buckner was a pretty good player back in the day when he did his thing. Look, I'm not trying to fit the horns. I'm not trying to put the goat horns onto Daniel Murphy. He's got that on him enough. I'm just wondering how bad it's going to get for him with Met fans. I mean, because, again, like we just said, he was a hero and a postseason record holder just a week ago. And, you know, Bill Buckner really only did one thing wrong, and he wound up being the goat that, you know, had to, or actually, the guy wearing the goat horns, I guess, for all right. those years until they finally got over the hump. I just wonder if the same thing is going to happen to Daniel Murphy.
It was a little different with Buckner and the Red Sox, being that they hadn't won in forever at that point in time, and they were leading in that game. They were leading in the series, more importantly. I know the Mets were leading at that point mm-hmm. last night, but they were not leading in the series. So I, if they win that game, then I guess they're even at two, so... It's close. It's close. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Like you say, going to cost him a couple of dollars in free agency come the end of the year. All right. Very good. Thank you, Pete Fox. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
It's going to do it for our Speaking of Sports this morning. Got a great, great slate of NFL, and some of it starts in about 30 minutes. Stay close and get ready to tee it up with the NFL. This is NBC Sports Radio.